I just slipped through an exam, and you're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
And we have another Radio 1 legend coming through to celebrate our 40th. We have James Dignan in the studio, who has... you've been around for as long as the station's existed, haven't you?
Pretty much, yeah.
It's incredible.
I started in the second year the station was going.
Yeah. Yeah, so. Remarkable stuff. What originally got you into Radio 1?
Well, I was in a band back in the mid-80s, and the bassist in the band had a regular show on Radio 1, and he was away one week, and he said, "Do you want to sit in?" So I sat in, and I was hooked. Mm-hmm. And the next year, I applied for my own position.
I think Andy Dixon had a very similar story as to how he became the breakfast host. Yeah.
I think a lot of people do it that way, actually. They sort of sit in on someone else's show and it becomes
cool.
So addictive.
Yeah, it is addictive. It's very addictive. Yeah, it is. And not in a bad way.
No.
What was the last show you had on the one?
Well, I'm still officially one of the co-hosts of Atmospheres with Rudy on Sunday mornings. Mm. But the last couple of years have been a bit of a problem for me one way or another, and Rudy's done almost all the shows. So
true.
Officially, I'm still here, but I just got to get back on the air again sometime.
Uh-huh. Fair enough. Well, hopefully we'll hear you back on air in a more consistent way in the future. Mm-hmm. We're here to talk about your history and your knowledge of the history of Radio 1, because you wrote a very extensive article about the history of the 1. And an awesome piece for Audio Culture. We list off former staff and DJs who have gone on to the national broadcasting sphere. How do you know so much about the one?
Well, a lot of it's simply because I've been here so long. I mean, I hate to think, how many people will have come through these doors and been on air since I've started here. So it's
quite
a history.
The level of detail. Do you have the memory of an elephant? I mean, it's incredible.
I've got a fairly good memory, and also it's just a case of looking up any information that I couldn't remember off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm. Did you have to talk to a lot of former DJs and staff as well?
I talked to quite a few. I mean, I talked to Wallace Chapman and to several others who are still around town, Simon Veer and Deirdre Newell and Leslie Parrish down at Access Radio. So, yeah.
Oh, true. When you were compiling all those stories, was there any... I mean, memory is such a fickle thing, right?
Mm.
Were their stories pretty consistent, or did some line up and some didn't?
Pretty much consistent,
okay,
I'd say, across the board. There's one or two cases where there's a bit of a Mandela effect, and either I got it completely wrong and someone else remembered properly, or the other way around. So.
That's cracker.
Yeah.
Before, you mentioned this in your Audio Culture article about the one, but before the one, there was Radio Ripper from 1975, which would broadcast here on Otago during Orientation Week. Yeah. It was a temporary setup which was repeated in following years. What happened to Radio Ripper?
I don't really know, to be honest. That's a bit before my time. That's stuff I had to look up.
True. Is there any information about Radio Ripper out there? Or is that just like
I don't think there's very much. There's probably something in the archives of the ODT and things like that and Critic, but other than that, I really don't know.
Mm, true. Did you have to go to the Hocken at all and find old microfiche or old newspapers for
I went to the Hocken for a few bits and pieces and to the public library as well for some stuff.
So. True. Because you did get that really funny photo of people down at the, was it the Port Chalmers Harbour?
The Birdman.
Birdman. That was at Otago.
That was at, down at Otago Harbour. Where the warehouses used to be, near the custom house where the restaurant is now.
Yes. Where they show the Matariki display.
Yeah.
That was crack. It reminded me of, I don't know if you've seen Jackass, but it reminded me of Jackass.
Yeah.
Yeah, you get the point.
Yeah.
Radio Ripper was crack up. In that article, you also mentioned how the Dunedin sound scene created an even stronger urge for a dedicated Otago Uni station, which would become Radio 1.
Yeah.
Dunedin has such a rich history of music, and as you point out in your article, was the first place in the country to broadcast radio. Why didn't you think there was a station sooner, given there were such strong links?
Back in the 80s, or particularly in the 70s as well, things were very, very restricted in New Zealand. There wasn't anywhere near the level of freedom for doing things as there what is now. stations, it was pretty much government-run radio stations, except for a few private ones, which were rigorously screened before they got a chance to apply for a license. So student stations, you know, there were still the old fuddy-duddies thinking students are not going to be able to run radio stations, and if they do, they're just going to swear on air all the time. And
smoke the devil's lettuce.
Shocking.
Yeah. Do all sorts of things. Yeah. Oh, true. That's quite infuriating, really.
Yeah.
It's very infuriating.
Also, back in those days, it was all AM. You know, if you wanted to broadcast, you needed a really big setup. Whereas with FM, it's cut down the size and the cost needed. And, of course, now you've got live streaming, which makes it even easier. So. Mm. Yeah.
And there's another interesting point you make in the article, is that the Dunedin sound actually also galvanised the need for a student station. Mm. Without that sound, do you think we would have had such a strong radio station?
I think it might have taken a lot longer to get off the ground, because a lot of the people who were involved in the setting up of the station were prominent Dunedin sound musicians. And in fact, if you look at the history of some old Flying Nun records, if you look at the personnel on those records, you're looking at lists of Radio 1 staff from those early days. I mean, we've had people like Shane Carter were heavily involved in the station in the early days, and David Pine from the band Sneaky Feelings was also heavily involved in the start of the station. So,
And I mean, Andy Dixon said that when he came here to record his band Isolation Backlash, that a member of the Verlaines was actually recording them in the studio here.
Yep, that would be Mike Stoodley. Probably.
Mike Stoodley, that's the one. Yep. Yeah. Stoodley-Doo, that's a great name. another interesting part about your audio culture article was that by the mid-90s, you said that certain contracts at the station were multi-year, which allowed for more continuity staff-wise. How did that improve the station?
As it says... continuity. It was the fact that you'd go from 1 year to the next and you'd have a similar sort of style going on. You'd have people who knew what was going on, because the idea of the 1 year contracts, which were a good thing for starting the station, although I did miss out myself on that because I was assistant station manager for 1 year and then got the boot.
Oh no.
But it did allow the original 1 year contract. It was very much a fly by night operation in the early days. So you got crazy ideas coming right, left and centre. And a new team came in. There were very few people from the previous year who'd be able to help out. And they'd have to start all over again with that idea. And they came up with their own craziness. So it was good in terms of the inspiration and innovation.
Yeah.
But to have that continuity really did help once the station started there.
What was the station like before we had those multi-year contracts? I mean, what were the broadcasts like? Were they quite bizarre?
they were pretty bizarre.
In a great way, I mean.
Yeah. When the station started, it wasn't in this wing of the Union Building. It was in two little offices over on the main part of the Union Building, which are now part of the USA management.
Oh, okay.
And it was literally it was an office smaller than this booth here, which was the office. And then there were two DJ booths, which were about the size of a large telephone box. one for the news presenter, which was literally a cupboard that had been converted. And one slightly larger for the DJ. And there were two turntables and one cassette deck, and that was it.
That's remarkable. Mm. And then did it change by 1990? Is that when they had ticket?
They came to this wing about 87, 88,
okay.
I think.
Okay, so not too long in the two cupboards.
No.
Good.
And that two cupboard setup also meant that anything that needed to be recorded for the station, the recording crew would have had an 8-track tape deck, which they'd lug over to the Clubs and Societies building and record in a room over there, which was never going to be a long-term thing. It would never have worked for a long-term.
No, it reminds me of in 2020 to 2021, I think, we had some renovations here in the thing. We had a new carpet put in, and we had to move the whole operation down to Clubs and Societies building, which was quite a headache.
Yeah, that's happened a couple of times. I think they at one time found asbestos in the roof or something, and they had to move out of here as well. So
It's not surprising. But it's weird, because I remember doing that and hosting a show just kind of in right next to the hallway at the Clubs and Socks building, which is just, you know, a series of glass windows.
Yeah.
And it was weird just having people look into you, looking at you while you're doing your thing. It feels much more, you feel much more naked, much more vulnerable. It wasn't very fun. It wasn't a very fun time. But speaking of fun times, you brought in a really, really awesome special treat for us. You brought in some old Radio 1 ads and promos from 1989. What was your capacity at the station in 1989?
89, I was assistant station manager.
Right, right, right.
Which basically meant I was general dog's body. If anyone was away, I'd do the job. So I did a bit of recording, a bit of interviewing on air, and a bit of DJing, and... if someone needed something done down in the recording studio, I'd be on the desk. If the manager was away, I'd be sitting on that, met advertisers, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, general dog's body.
Did you record any of these ads?
I recorded quite a few of them, particularly the promos. I wrote and recorded the promos myself. It was very much a case of, you know, if there's 5 minutes free and there was no one in the production studio, I'd go down and whip something up so that it's another promo for the station. And a couple of the short ones on that disc there are ones which I did entirely myself. So
I'm really looking forward to playing the Belly Bongo Hydro Surf ad. Can you explain a little bit about what
this
that is?
This was perhaps the maddest thing that ever happened in the... in the Radio 1 recording studio. If not, it'll be on the short list of it. There's this guy called Greg Page who ran Hydro Surf City. The surfing shop had two branches in that, at that time, one in Centre City and one down in St Clair. They're still down in St Clair. And he had this idea for an ad. He's pretty mad himself, so he had this idea for an ad. He wanted to do a sort of drum solo during an ad, but not on drums. He wanted to do it on human flesh. So we had our station advertising manager Nathan McConnell lying bare chested on a table in the recording studio while Greg
drummed
on his stomach.
Oh my God.
And the rest of the Radio 1 staff in the background doing falsetto voices. It took about 10 takes, I suppose, and they were getting crazier and crazier every time. People were getting to the stage where it couldn't be recorded anymore because we were just falling around laughing.
Yeah, I imagine it would be hard to keep a straight face while trying to record.
But it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, it sounds like a lot of fun, and I'm really excited to hear it. Here is the Belly Bongo Hydro Surf ad from 1989. Let's get into it.
Ticket for me, Big Belly Bongo. Hydro Surf City has t-shirts and shorts to fit any body. And plenty of groovy threads for the women. Right, women?
Right, Belly!
So before I do my famous Belly Bongo solo, I'm telling you to check out Hydro Surf City on Maury Place and Princess Street in the big black glass building. Bye!
Well, that is impeccable stuff right there. That was the Belly Bongo Hydro Surf ad from 1989. My goodness, that was something. That certainly was something.
It was a lot of fun to make. It really was.
I bet it was. Holy heck. Do you think that was your favourite era of Radio 1?
In a way, yeah, because it was so much fly-by-the-seat-of-your-pants stuff that people would be coming in, doing something strange in the studio, and then leaving again. And it was basically a rotating door of people doing strange things.
Mm-hmm. No, it's still kind of like that, but in a different way.
Yeah.
same, but different.
Yeah, it's become much more slick. And I don't mean that in a bad way. It's become more professional, which is a good thing, because, okay, it's good to have a lot of fun, but it's also good to sound... like you belong on the airwaves.
Yeah, and have a bit more focus.
Yeah.
For sure. You've requested a pretty special track that we're going to play. It's one of your old bands, The Moomins, with Everything You Dream.
Yep.
So do you write this song or make this song with the band while you were here at the station?
It would have been while I was at the station. I wrote it myself. and we had Mike Stoodley do the
nice.
The recording of it. In fact, I'll probably still owe him some beers for that. but yeah, my band was around for. I had two bands, first the Caftans and then the Moomins, which we were around for about 4 or 5 years mm-hmm. back in the late 80s. And since then, I've done a lot of solo work. I'm still playing sort of folk rock style stuff around town, sort of like a one-man Bats, I suppose, sound-wise. If that gives you any idea.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this was a song we did, recorded at the station here back in the late 80s.
Awesome. Well, I think we get right into it. Thank you very much for coming on the program. It was
That's all right.
Honestly, great history lesson. And I'm looking forward to hearing you come on Atmospheres.
It'd be good to get back there.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah. Awesome. All right, thank you very much, James. Here is the Moomins with Everything You Dream. You're listening to The One, the breakfast show that is on The One on Te Reo Irirangi Kotahi. Take care. See you soon.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast, but find more at r1.co.nz.